This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
I'm Bill Cloud. I'm Assistant Chief Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Well, folks, we are very pleased to bring a dear, dear friend to Baptist on the podcast today, Peter Schein. And you're probably very familiar with that name. And we're going to be talking about the third edition of Humble Inquiry, a book that's had such a big help for so many people. But for Peter, for those in our audience that maybe aren't completely familiar with your background, would you tell us a little bit about your background? And would you start to frame up, in case they don't know, what is Humble Inquiry?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have spent about 6 years working with my father, Ed Schein, who was sort of one of the founding fathers of organization behavior and organization development theory. It started kind of in the 60s and had its sort of its ebbs and flows over the years. And around 2011, Ed moved out here to California with me. I had sort of been doing a number of consulting projects, having had a long career in a bunch of big companies in Silicon Valley, tech companies like Apple and Sun and Silicon Graphics. And I had had a great run, but Ed and I started talking and wanted to do some work together and some writing together. And he had written a book called Helping right before he moved out to California. And from Helping evolved a term called Humble Inquiry. And Humble Inquiry is a concept, it's an art, it's a skill, it's a way of thinking about how to communicate at work. And it's interesting because for Ed and I, it was a sort of a unifying theme, but it also led us into other work together, including a book called Humble Leadership. And I believe on my first visit to this podcast, we were talking about humble leadership. Ed was with us. This is actually my third visit to this podcast. I'm thrilled to report that. Maybe if I do five, I get a jacket or something.
Absolutely. We, you know, Peter, we've never talked about that, but I think we need to get Skip on that.
Yeah. Come up with a couple more things to talk to you guys about. But so Humble Inquiry, you know, it was one of our editors at one of the publishers who said, well, that should be a book in itself because it was a section of the Helping book. And so we developed the concept further. And one of the things that's sort of central to the concept is that you need to be closer to the people that you work with. Our general thesis is that transactional relationships, professional distance, often get in the way when what you really need to do is get to know people a little bit better. And it sounds a little bit trite, but we've got a whole sort of theory about levels of relationship and how you can move to deeper levels of openness and trust and essentially create a substrate that then is fruitful the next time you have a challenge or an opportunity to work on with that person that you're developing a more open and trusting relationship with. And so humble inquiry as a skill and as a set of principles, as sort of an attitude, is one of the ways that we think you really can move your relationship forward. You can move out of a transactional relationship and more into an open and trusting, or what we call personal relationship. We actually accidentally coined a term, personization, and we decided, yeah, let's keep that, because the idea of personization is that you're intentionally trying to get to know somebody better, draw yourselves together, connect your personal lives with your work lives. That is not taboo. That is something that we all do. We all learned to do that in the pandemic, and we shouldn't shy away from it. Certain things are kind of embargoed. We don't have to talk about everything. We have terms like TMI for a reason, but it's important that people recognize that whole people come to work every day, and whole people should be able to have professional relationships with each other, and let that be, you know, part of who you are at work. And humble inquiry is a way of developing that substrate. So, you know, just to sort of to carry it forward, we did an Ed did an early edition of Humble Inquiry. Then we did another one together that came out around 19 or 20. And then this one I worked on by myself at the encouraging of Ed passed away a couple of years ago at 95. We can shed a tear, but no regrets, because he was working on the day he died. And, you know, that's the way to do it. Just keep going. Just don't retire. Sorry if anybody's out there is in retirement age. I'm just saying, well, rewire. Don't retire. and so Ed was a great example of rewiring. We just kept going with things. And but so I said, kind of at the encouragement of the publisher, let's just make some improvements. You know, you guys are in the continuous improvement game. Well, this is the continuous improvement of the Humble Inquiry book. And if you want, I can talk through some of that, or if you guys have some questions now before I plow into those differences, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, Peter, first of all, thank you for being on, and thank you for that intro. I mean, we're really excited to have you, consider you a friend, and so much of what we've continued to learn and how Humble Inquiry connects to our organization, to our culture, and really helps people articulate the kind of relationship, the kind of the level two relationship to develop trust. And we talk about it through our principles of respect, humility, and empathy in order to build those trusting relationships. So really excited to unpack. Maybe before we jump into those improvements to the third edition, you talked about something when you're developing trust, you talk about the substreams that develop fruit. And I really like that example. What is the fruit? Will you unpack that a little bit more? What is the fruit that you see, and how do you know when you're kind of there to that trusting relationship?
Yeah. I think I had sort of described it as a transactional relationship sort of gets you through that transaction, right? It gets you through that moment, that opportunity, or that challenge. But it doesn't really leave you much for the next one. The idea of creating that substrate is that you have a level of trust and a level of openness, and that includes vulnerability. It includes empathy, so that the next time you and that person, and it could be tomorrow, it could be next year, have another challenge or opportunity that's facing you, you have some muscle memory on how to get through it together. It isn't just a matter of, a transactional relationship is sort of like an API, right? It's a fixed agreement on what bits are going to pass between, one node to the other, right? That's, I guess I'll use sort of those machine terms, because I think of transactional relationships as humans acting as machines, and I'm not sure we should be doing that at work.
I agree. Yeah, that's great.
So the idea of kind of building something that scales to the next transaction, if you will, or the next challenge or opportunity that you have to face together, you learn together. And, one of our dear friends, Amy Edmondson, who's, you probably know her well, because she's written some really important books. She sort of established the idea that teams that learn together are the ones who sort of ultimately end up succeeding. How you really learn something as a team is when you learn it together, not when individuals try to train others. You need to kind of train yourselves together. And the idea of having that substrate of, openness and trust is just that. You've learned how together to get through a challenge, And the next time, the next challenge, which you will, you know, you won't expect it. Some, you know, there's always expect the unexpected. Well, are you going to be ready the next time? Because your API, if it's a transactional relationship, may not be ready. You may discover that you have to share information that you weren't ready to share because that was part of your power or part of your professional distance.
Yeah, so then, I love that visual. Yeah, I love the visual that the relationship really transcends and moves past that project or that transaction to prepare for the next project or
project. And it's natural. It's part of what you develop as a social and sentient creature, right? You know, humans are social. And so don't throw that relationship away. Don't throw that away. Keep building on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. All right. So, and then again, let's kind of move to, we've unpacked a little bit, talked about humble inquiry, and a lot of people, a lot of our listeners are very familiar with your work. And so we're excited to hear about some of the key additions or improvements that you made in the third edition. Where would you like to start?
Let me start plowing into it and then stop me and interrogate me further. Yeah. And by the way, interrogate in the good
sense. The best way. Asking questions we don't already know the answer to. Right?
Yes. Right. That it doesn't. It's not the Spanish Inquisition. It's a healthy interrogation, which, you know, you guys in the medical world do it all the time. And you have to. It's important. So I guess the first thing I'll say is that there's a new chapter in the book that was requested, but I probably would have arrived at it as well without the editor requesting it. But I think it's even featured on the cover, because this, you know, the first edition was written before the pandemic. The second edition was kind of written, I think it was actually, we probably finished the manuscript also before the pandemic. And, we all learned how our relationships changed when we were working from home. And they may have evolved positively or they may have eroded negatively. But the point being that we had to sort of figure out how to personize, how to be, whole human beings with each other. In a new way over networks, whether it was video or audio. You know, I think we all figured out how to, be the same whole people, but doing it over with, you know, cameras and microphones. And so I tried to tackle that. How is this whole notion of building an open and trusting relationship enhanced or not by, you know, this process of being remote, of not always being together in the office? And I will say that there's a story in that chapter that includes Skip, because I think, and I say this, that Skip and I, to this day, I don't think you're named Skip.
I'm okay either way.
Rejected the innocent.
Well, that's great. And now it gives our readers and our listeners an Easter egg to go find, right,
Peter? Yes.
So not only are you going to sell a bunch of books, but there's a hunt on the way.
Yeah. Well, so I talked about sort of the complexities of eye contact. And because often eye contact is very important and very fruitful, but it also can be kind of deceptive. We can communicate things with our eyes that may not be exactly what we are wanting to say. And so I have a section where I talk about, well, how does that flow of communication work when you aren't looking across the table at each other? You're looking at something else. And of course, with video conferencing, we're often in that sort of tricky role of, what do I look at? Do I look at Brad? That means I'm not looking at the camera. Do I look at the camera, which means I'm not looking at Skip? I mean, it may appear to Skip that I'm looking at him, but I'm not. I can't see his expression. And frankly, Dr. McLeod is behind the camera, so I can't see him at all. Yeah. It's one thing that, you know, the at some point technology will improve and the cameras will be embedded in our screens so that we can see both. But for the time being, at any rate, Skip and I, at one point, he was out for the Lean conference in at Stanford. And so he's right in the neighborhood, and we were working on that conference together. And so we had a chance to have a long walk around the Stanford campus, where I went as an undergrad, and I still visit all the time. We live right nearby, and the campus has evolved, you know, incredibly over the years. And so we were just sort of walking and talking, and, you know, having a fruitful conversation about work stuff, but also just kind of interrupting each other every once in a while where we see something interesting. And the point is, we developed a sort of a rapport. We developed a enhancements to our relationship that were built on a sort of a low level of distraction that was very helpful. It just allowed us to kind of communicate at a sort of head-to-head and heart-to-heart level, that if we were sitting in a formal meeting with a table in between us, I'm not sure we would have developed. So that's the Skip Easter egg. But I think the concept of let's be mindful about when eye contact is helpful and when maybe it's, you know, it's throwing us curveballs. It's a distortion. It's another way that humans, you know, either look to connect or look to deceive.
Yeah, Peter, I love that because it's not only, to me, it's eye contact, and I think that's the key point, but it's also the, you know, getting to go for a walk, you know, and the value of that, you know, walking with someone and talking as you do that creates a different environment and a way to make a deeper connection. And so I love that story, and I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, and of course, you know, and our rules about social distancing were so different outdoors than they were indoors. So I think we did sort of evolve as a country, or maybe as a globe, a feeling of, you know, we can communicate outdoors in ways that fulfills our needs around, you know, keeping droplets out of other people's mouths, but also enjoying the atmosphere, enjoying the world that we live in, has a net benefit. It wasn't maybe intended, but it certainly had a net benefit for
all. The other thing, Peter, just to make a comment, because I've shared this when I've shared our humble inquiry practice session that you and I and Ed developed, I'll share this story that when I was out there in Palo Alto, you know, I was driving over to meet you and Ed and your amazing wife for dinner. And I remember thinking, you know, what's this going to be like, right? Because I had spent over two years every Tuesday at 1 o'clock with you and Ed thinking, well, I've only been with them on camera. And I was very surprised, almost shockingly surprised, that it wasn't that different. It was just an extension of the relationship. And when I look back at that, I think that's because in that Tuesday at 1 o'clock for 2 years, we were very intentional at practicing humble inquiry, asking questions that we didn't know the answer to, revealing more of ourselves. And so when we actually met in person, it wasn't this, you know, surprised that everything was so different. So I just point that out because that will forever stick in my mind.
Yeah. And you know, relatedly, Skip, I do sort of come around to the conclusion that, and I think a lot of companies that are thinking about sort of a hybrid work plan, some days in the office, some days, you know, hybrid or remote, that it has to be both. Right. You can't really expect to have that full whole person to whole person relationship with somebody that you've actually never shared the same air with, you know, or been in the same place with. It's, you know, at some point we are, you know, still humans and need to be in that three-dimensional contemporaneous space to really kind of get to know each other. So, you know, I'd like to say that we learned how to do this over networks, but we also need the actual human contact. So just a couple other of the things that are in the new book, that I condensed the sort of 20th century social psychology theory concepts of the Johari window and the orgy cycle, just because I thought they're related and I didn't want to, overburden the reader with some of this ancient but sort of fundamental theory. I still think it's important, but I wanted to kind of tune and tighten that a little bit. So I hope anybody who loves the two separate chapters won't be disappointed that I combine them into one. The one that I want to talk about, though, for a second is Ed used a term that's actually, I think it's on your card, that I decided I needed to purge. And the term, maybe if we had a more time, we'd do a little guessing game. You'd read through the card and say, what's the term that I decided we needed to reset on? Any quick guess, Skip? I'll tell you. I was never quite comfortable with Ed's term, accessing your ignorance. And here's why. Ed was using ignorance in a sort of clinical social psychological sense, but ignorance has become such a kind of, such a heavy word in our hyper tribal, the hyper tribal world that we live in, that, both sides will think of the other side as ignorant. And that is not at all what Ed meant. What is meant by that is allowing what you don't know to become a feature, not a bug. You use what you don't know as a way to be more curious, to be
curious, right?
Yeah, to be more vulnerable. And you don't consider a weakness that you don't know something. So that's what Ed meant by accessing your ignorance. But I just felt like let's move away from that term, just so that we don't get people all, twisted up about what ignorance means. And let's think about what it means is that you accept the fact that there are things that you don't know that will be helpful for you to inquire about, but also by displaying that vulnerability to something you don't know, you are actually working through that process of developing openness and trust.
Peter, I love that, and I think that's a great kind of evolution in taking kind of cultural context today and making it more succinct and specific to what you really want the reader and the learner to experience. So what was replaced? I'm curious, what term did you land on?
I just explained it. I explained point without using the word ignorance.
Yeah. Very good.
Lack of knowledge.
But the funny thing about
I'm not exactly sure how I worked around it, but I just sort of felt like I know what Ed meant, but some people are going to would connote something different. And so let's just not get into that.
Yeah.
But a little comic relief, first of all, I want to give credit where credit is due. Dr. Bill Cloud is with us today. He's the one that highly motivated me and continue to encourage me to create the card. And I got to tell this because no one else. So we have this little card for the listeners that it's just a reminder about the attitude as well as the art of humble inquiry. And Dr. Bill Cloud came to me and said, what we could really use, Skip, is a card, just like our TWI cards, like our JR and stuff. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I said, okay, if I start this conversation with Peter and Ed, and we start iterating, and we start plan, do, studying, adjusting, and Ed's making me read books from 1960, and we're iterating. And then when we're all done, I can remember it like it was yesterday, when we're all done, we had finally, went through it, Ed looked at me on camera and said, Skip, you know, we don't really know if this is actually going to be helpful or not. It's just an experiment. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, but on the ignorant part, and, you know, in his defense, I'm looking at the card right now, you know, it says actually access your ignorance by learning to distinguish what I know, what do I assume, and what do I truly not know. But when the first way he told that to me, wonderful memory, he did his hands like this. I know the listener can't see me, but we were talking in one of our sessions about the here and now humility. And Ed looked at me and said, Skip. He said, embrace your ignorance.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Peter.
And again, we all know what he meant. But it just, there were times when I could, you know, if I was talking to people and that you just see a little cringe every once in a while when you use that word. And so I just thought, let's not take the risk. But I will tell you that your card is important. I have used it as a prop in presentations and just saying that, you know, It's part of what we describe as it's an art and a skill, but there's nothing wrong with sort of reminding yourself, because you've got that card in your pocket. Just, you know, it's another way of just kind of becoming more mindful and present. Like, it just reminds you, all right, wait, I am asking leading questions, or I am crossing the net. Or I am starting to advise when I am not qualified to advise. You know, people often will ask us for, you know, Ed was adamant about this, and I've tried to maintain that adamance that when somebody asks you for advice, do not give it, because they might be asking for advice. There is so much more that you need to know about what's going on with a person who comes to you and asks advice. So humble inquiry is about, you know, drawing closer, getting a sense of what's really going on with the person, because often that question for advice is a miscue. It's something's going on. People need to talk. People may need some help, but, you know, and as Skip, as you know, Michael Bungay Stanier is, you know, wrote a very important book called The Advice Trap. And we developed that idea a little bit, not to the extent that he does in that book, but and he wrote the foreword to the new edition. So that was an honor for us, because he's very important. And so at any rate, I think the idea of let's be always be mindful and intentional about how we're inquiring with people, because, you know, the questions you ask can really throw things off. And humble inquiry is about being very careful not to try to throw things off.
Peter, you know, you talked earlier about learning together, you know, and having shared experiences where, you know, you're actually facing a challenge, and, you know, Skip's involved in improvement work, and the improvement work I'm involved with is around quality. And so we actually looked at, all right, who do we need to go and see to watch somebody who has really done produced good results? So we actually went up to Rush Medical Center in Chicago, and we intentionally put together a group that the reason for the people in that group was to share the experience.
Yeah.
And so then when we got back, we're like, okay, what do you recommend as a technique when you have a shared experience to sort of embed that, whatever your learning was, and to build off of that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think that often happens when groups do something like that is that, you know, start to finish, and then you're done, and do you really spend the time in the after, you know, what I guess in the military they'd call the after action review, or the post-mort, you know, mort's probably the wrong term, but, you know, it's a It's a post-meeting review, and what in our view, and in fact, I think we describe this as a plus delta meeting, where you describe what was good, what worked, what did you learn, and delta, what would you change? And the point about that is that it's what's very important in that sort of group process is that everybody gets a chance to speak, right? You don't let, you know, the loudest voices in the room will probably always be the loudest voices in the room, but make sure you've heard from everybody on what they would, you know, what did they learn? What was positive? What would they change? What was lacking? And so that you don't get that learning sort of evaporating, right? Make sure that it's turned into solid liquid for you to you know, refer to later. So hope that is helpful.
So Peter, you know, I know we don't have a lot of time left on the podcast, but I definitely wanted you to hit on something I believe is in the new book, and I'm just going to highly recommend it. I've already went out and looked at it on Amazon, and by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be coming out, so I just can't recommend it enough. But something that was so impactful to me that you and Ed shared, but it wasn't in the second edition, but I believe it's in the third edition, and that's this mnemonic that you have called passing the mic.
Yeah.
And it happened to be that mnemonic really had an impact on me, because at the same time you shared it with me, I was watching with my daughter American Idol. And it happened to be when I was watching that Lionel Richie was giving some feedback to two singers that were doing a duet, but they kept stepping on each other. They kept kind of overriding each other. And he was explaining, what does it mean to do a duet? What does it mean to sing together? And he kind of was talking about, what does it mean to share the mic? And so tell us briefly, what is this mnemonic of, because it really captures the attitude of humble inquiry.
Right. Okay, good. Well, you know, I guess the first thing that maybe one of the things that motivated that mnemonic is that it's the term sharing the mic is a term that we're familiar with. And so it sort of flowed naturally from that. But the mic is there are three words in there, and the first word is motivation, that you really need to be generally interested and generally concerned to improve a relationship or to communicate more deeply. So, and humans are very, very good at you know, being able to discern when somebody's not being themselves or being authentic or being genuine. And so the motivation is you really need to care. You need to be truly motivated to move the thing forward. The I is an interesting one because, and this is something that Ed used to say, that everything is an intervention. And so the I is intervention. And the point about that is to recognize that even if it seems very trivial, you are intervening in somebody else's process. Right, you're intervening in their thinking, by asking, you know, open-ended questions. You are intervening in their process or their flow, and so never kind of forget that you're not an anonymous fly on the wall. You are intervening, and you owe it to them to listen deeply. Right, in your intervention is your commitment and your deep listening ability and you know, commitment to the other person. The C is contribution. What we're saying with contribution is that part of sharing the mic is that you're going to start to contribute a little bit of your thoughts or your feelings or your vulnerabilities in order to improve that flow of communication. It can't just be you intervening with questions to them. At some point, the process of what we call personization includes your contributing to them. You're helping by contributing a little bit of your experience. So that's what sharing the mic is about. And it it's, you know, it is in the new book, and it's sort of, it's embedded in this concept of personalization. The other thing that I wanted to mention that I added was this idea, you know, we talk about the relationship levels, and I do, I did add a chapter or a section of a chapter on doing the relationship mapping exercise, which was not in the previous edition. But I also talked about level 2.5, which is something that's always come up whenever we have these conversations. It came up with you guys. It has come up in so many exercises where we do this and somebody says, yeah, I mean, man, I spent a lot of time with that person, and we finish each other's sentences. We're really deeply connected at work. It's more than just a level 2 relationship. It's a level 2.5 relationship. And part of the point of that is that we do want you to think about these relationship levels as more of a continuum than 4 discrete levels. It really is, you know, humans are not, you know, we are multidimensional, and we are capable of lots of nuance. And so, you know, there could be just an infinite number of curves in this relationship model. However, I will say that I'm still not sure whether I think there's a level 1.5. And what I mean there is there something that is kind of transactional? You know, and I guess I've sort of come to, I can't remember if I said this in the book or not. I know I've said it in discussions, that I kind of feel like if it's transactional, it's transactional. And if it's personal, it's personal. So maybe there isn't a level 1.5. That's something in between. However, I like the fact that when people go through this exercise, when they do relationship mapping, they kind of want to go there. They want to say, you know, we're getting there. And so maybe what level 1.5 is, you're in the process of personization. It's, you know, it's not yet a level 2 relationship, but you're working on it. And that's like that, important too. The time dimension of this often always comes up. I know that I've got this kind of relationship now, but I also know that I need to develop it. So, and I'm going to give myself some credit for working on it. So anyway, yeah, that we do spend a lot of time on the relationship levels in the book, and because we think that's a very important way to think about how you kind of improve how you communicate, improve how you become more effective. We know there's lots of ways that we can become more efficient. We also want you to think deeply about how to be more effective with people. And sometimes it feels like it takes too much time. God, I really, you know, this is, I gotta get stuff done. I don't have time to just work on this substrate he's describing. You do have time. You know, that you absolutely find time, and maybe it's in after hours, and since you're not technically working, maybe that's just fine. You know, I guess the other thing, I often come back to this quote. It's from an old poem by T.S. Eliot. It captures something that is just so important to me, is and important to Ed in what we do, that he's describing the challenges that humans face, and in the darkness, humans searching for systems so perfect that no one will need to be good. And our view would be, however perfect your systems might be, humans still need to be good. And humble inquiry is about being good to each other, right? And it's good, of course, in probably really ultimately the spiritual or Christian sense. And you need to recognize that. Think about that in your work. You know, you still need to be good to each other. Even if the system defines ways that you can be very efficient, you still need to be good with each other, which is what I mean by effectiveness. So
that is awesome, Peter. Really excited. By the time this podcast comes out, all of our audience, you'll be able to go find the third edition of Humble Inquiry. I've already went and looked at it. It can be pre-ordered right now as we're recording this podcast in April. So yes, I want to encourage you to go do it. It's had such a positive impact on me personally, you know, and on the relationship mapping. If you're interested, on our YouTube channel, Baptist Management System, you can see me and Peter from a couple years ago. We did a video called Relationship Mapping, and you could literally watch that 18-minute video and go make a map right then and there. But I'll end the podcast with something that Ed said to me every single week on, it felt like on a regular basis, that life is a series of conversations and everything happens through conversations and relationships. And on that note, Peter, we are so grateful to have a relationship with you, so grateful for the work that you do and that Ed has done in the past. And on behalf of the Baptist Memorial Healthcare, please come back and visit us again. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I really appreciate that every once in a while I get to have these conversations with you guys, because I feel the same, that it's been great to develop the relationship, and let's continue it. And thanks so much for having me today.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.